Last thing I want to talk about today is the marina. So this is really just in terms of possibilities on financing the marina. There's no real cash flow or anything to an extent. I mean, you'll see some numbers on the paper here, but when you look at financing a marina and what we talked about in the working group session with Barb and Mike is that there are a lot of estimates right now. So we'll be talking in terms of a lot of estimates of estimated revenue for the slip costs and estimated costs for how much it's actually going to be to make the dockage and get it in to the marina. Essentially, what you're trying to do is to, with a swag figure, is get this done. What's the best way to do this in terms of, can we do it? Is it feasibly financially to do it? Is it feasible in the sense of Barb's time and the city and everything else to do this, or do we need to keep what we have? So what we looked at, there is actually a bunch, I think we got up to like 8 or so options. What we narrowed it down to is 3 different options to possibly look at financing what you're looking at on the map here for the marina. What we have to be under the understanding of, first off, is that I would like the marina to do well financially and everything work out, but the city has to be under the assumption that it is backed by the city's general fund. So anything we talk about tonight in terms of revenues, expenses, at the end of the day, if you get into debt, it's backed by the city, no matter what happens. So
if we have a huge economic downturn, people stop going to the marina for a few years, they stop using the slips, we're on the hook for it.
Yep, the whole thing. So what we're going to talk about in terms of these analyses is everything actually, there are some good possibilities for doing this whole thing. But we got to be careful about this, the sense that, and looking at it also in the sense of, we want to do this, it can make sense financially, but we also have to look at what could potentially happen if it doesn't work out like we're hoping. So these are one analysis, actually. There's 2 different pages, so I'll hand you one at a time. Yep. There's 2 different scenarios that you see in front of you, and we're going to talk about the overall first, and then I'll tell you the difference between the two, which is the grant. But the overall is that there are 2 different basic things that we're looking at. And I'll put them on the map here. And Barb, if I screw up, please tell me otherwise. So what currently exists is this portion right here. D-dock, which if you looked really closely, you'll see some dashed lines. So it's not all of this, but there's a current D-dock, as we call it, in terms of the existing structure there. And there's a current E-dock, which is right here. The proposal from Ab and Marsh looked at replacing D-dock and E-dock, adding on what is called C-dock, adding on B-dock, and the attenuators. So this T you currently already paid for, that's already there. But everything that's colored is the potential new projects and looking at replacements of existing and building new. When we looked at the finances, and we'll get to the scenarios in a second, but it really comes down to when you look at this extension, which is nothing's currently over there right now, this is a no-brainer. Really, this in terms of the revenue,
the projected revenue, the projected cost to build BDOC and A2 into it, if you get the grant money. That's the biggest question, is are we going to get a portion of the grant, all the grant? We'll talk about what that means. But if we do, this terms like the BDOC and A2 is really, everything's in good position. For the other ones, there is the potential of it to swing either way depending on grant money and costs of what we do. And if we tackle this whole thing, if we tackle part of it, if we don't do utilities on A3 and A4, we'll talk about all that. But what I want to talk about first is this top portion, which is B and A2, the add-on. When you issue bonds for a marina, and there's other options, but I'm going to tell you, we're just going to jump to the conclusion of what you would actually do if you did this, was that you would issue capital improvement bonds backed by the City of Boynton City General Fund, and they would be issued in X term, depending on what we all decide on and what the finances look like. And you would go to the market, whether it's a bank or broker, and sell the bonds in the market at some point competitively. And then based on what you get in the interest rate and all that,
you're
and the cash flow.
1.923.
Yeah. Right. Hopefully, if you did it today, we would be looking at pretty good. Even if, this portion B and A2 that we're looking at potentially doing this year, I mean, there's a good chance, I would hope that interest rates aren't going to change that much. So there's a good chance you could get a really good interest rate this year on that portion. But that shouldn't be the overall driver. The overall driver is, do the finances make sense conservatively to do these projects? And Barb, Mike, administration, Cindy, commission, is everyone on board with doing these, knowing that there is the potential that if something bad happens, the city is going to have to come up with funds to subsidize? So let's talk about what B and A2 looks like in terms of the Abenmarsh approach, and then what are the potential options. So Barb, actually, I'm going to hand this over to you for a second. If you could talk about the waterways grant and what we have potential for there.
So with the waterways grant, there is no minimum, there is no maximum that you can request. It's not capped. However, the total amount of funds that they have to disperse has a cap. And so you never know from year to year until all the applications are submitted, and if they're sitting on $6 million that they're going to disperse, you don't know if by asking for $500,000 that's a huge ask because they have so many other requests, or if they received hardly any requests and there's all kinds of money sitting there. So it's a chance you take. I have seen, because I sit on the commission, I have seen where they have offered communities a little less money than what they've asked for, but that's not typically how they handle it, but they will consider it. If you, and it changes from year to year, from grant cycle to grant cycle, but when we asked for the $260,000 to do the portion that we did, we fell just under what they call group versus line item. And group is when they take all these projects and they group them together and they get one approval, the projects that go. Line item is when it has to go to legislature to be, you know, and so that money comes a little bit later. If it's group, applications are due April 1 and we usually know by June, and there's a grant agreement in place by July and you're good to start rolling. If it's line item, which it generally I would say would be if we're looking at $500,000 or so, we wouldn't see any of that until later, probably not until the first of the following year.
So when you look at option one, we did two scenarios in looking at potential grant. The first one is if we get a grant of $500,000
And this is on, probably should number these pages, but it says at the very top, $500,000 grant per option.
That's page one.
This is page one, yeah. If you want to number it, yes, please do. This is page one, $500,000 grant per option. The overall that we're looking at, and this is was discussed in the working group, is that we would potentially do two phases of doing this approach. Phase one is B and A2, which is the new addition that we're going to talk about, is option one. Phase two is option two or option three, or a different scenario if we need to look at a different one, but that you're going to do either or on these option two or three. So we would be looking at potentially applying for waterways grants for two $500,000 fiscal year commitments. And this is showing that if we got those two $500,000 fiscal year commitments, this is what we would be looking at. So real quick, I do want to talk about the current Merida Fund finances. So 15 through 19 at the very top, you'll see what is the charges for services, which is the slip revenue, and the expenses. What you can see is that on the very right hand side, you'll see an average of about $36,000 excess per year. Again, this is all leading up into my talk. Again, I'm all about it. If everyone wants to do it, all about it. My job as a financial advisor is to make sure everybody knows that going into it, that if the finances don't come out, there are other funds that are going to be needed. So that's really my disclaimer, is that these are all averages. We got to be on that same page. But in terms of the Merida Fund right now, it's in good position financially. Again, the excess is on average $36,000. There are some years that are higher, there are some years that are lower, but the average is $36,000. Looking at option one, so let's talk about numbers here on option one. The additional revenue that's projected by Barb and Abbott Marsh together, I think, and working together with those two, is that the option one would bring in an additional $72,000 of revenue, which you'll see, everybody seeing that number? Option one, $72,179. That's the estimated additional revenue by building B and A2.
How many slips?
Let's see the slip count for that one. It's just total.
It's about
29
or something. It's 15 squared, so it's 10 squared.
So 30 plus broadside.
Okay. The estimated cost for option one is $1,500,000. If we bond for it, there's going to be bond costs, bond attorney, financial advisor, a couple ancillary fees as well. That's estimated to be $27,000. We got the $500,000 grant taken out of there, and that's assumed, and then the borrowing amount is a little over $1 million. If you look at an aggressive, which is not in today's aggression numbers, as we're still being a little bit conservative to make sure we don't shoot ourselves in the foot, but we do like to look at it in terms of conservative versus aggressive numbers, so you can see, hopefully, we're going to be somewhere in between here to give you an idea of if the bond market moves one way or another, you can count on this is about where we're going to be in terms of the annual debt service required, and then are we going to need excess cash flow to pay for this debt issue. So we looked at a 15-year bond issue for option one. An aggressive standpoint would be a 2% interest rate. It would be $80,000 per year for that debt service. If you look at the conservative side, it would be about $85,000. So not too much of a difference, actually, for that bond issue because it's relatively small. You're looking at payments between $80,000 and $85,000 per year for 15 years. But the overall is that it's not going to bring in as much revenue, it's not going to bring in as much revenue as the expense for bonds. You are going to have a little bit of excess cash flow needed. But given a relative typical year for the Merida Fund, that would be within the typical marina fund revenues and expenses excess, is to cover that $8,000 or $13,000 out of the typical fund. But again, what I do like to point out is, let's say something happens like 2016. 2016 was run at basically a zero cash flow. If that happened and you didn't have any cash in the marina fund to cover the excess, basically you'd have to have some outside fund, whether it's general or streets or something else, would have to kick in the excess to cover the debt payment. So, but on a given year, the marina fund can handle that and would pay for that bond issue out of the marina fund revenues. The overall for option one, the BDOC and A2, as I talked about, if you get a $500,000 grant, it's really, I mean, in my eyes, that's really a no-brainer. I mean, you're adding additional dockage, you're improving the marina and in a pretty significant way by adding that many slips and everything, and to do so in a way that is relatively not, I mean, you're barely above what your additional revenue is going to be for the bond cost. That to me is a pretty good option to look at. When you look at why a 15-year, not something different that you'll see in the $250,000 grant option, one of the things that you do have to be careful about, and this might be, it's in terms of what we talk about, and $1 million sounds like a lot. It's not a lot to the bond community. One of the things that we have to be careful about, and I traded emails with Mike on Friday about this, is that you'll see a second option for option one when we move on to, if we got a $250,000 grant, what we might have to look at if we get a less grant amount. When you look at selling bonds, there's two different things you have to be concerned about. Is it legal? What you're doing legal in terms of, is there an enabling act to do what you want to do? The second one is somebody going to buy it? Just because it's legal doesn't mean that somebody's going to come to the plate and buy it. You could go out to the market and do a 30-year bond issue for $50,000. No one's going to buy it. Good luck. But it's legal. So that's what you have to be careful about when you talk about a bond issue, and I, in general terms, say less than $2 million, very general terms. But if you look at a bond that's less than $2 million, you're going to have potentially issues with somebody buying that if you get too far out. If you go longer than 15 years, you're broke. What essentially is, there's a break point in the market. 15 years and less is bank market driven, typically. For smaller bond issues, at least. If you're less than $2 million and 15 years or less, that's a bank all day long. Banks love that kind of paper. They're going to play, both your local banks and or regional and national banks are going to play in that market. You really don't have to be too concerned about it, because there's a lot of banks that like smaller bond issues. But when you get longer than 15 years, most banks do not go longer than that. There are very few banks that go longer than 15 years, and that's their internal investment policy. They don't lend municipal bonds for longer than 15 years, other than, I would say, I mean, we know of about 5 out of 60 that we work with that go longer than 15 years. So you can see, I mean, you cut out a lot of the market if you go longer than 15 years. What you have to be concerned about in this sense is that, okay, that should be... Okay, then if you don't have the banks, then you got the brokers. The brokers play in any market that's legal. So anywhere from 0 to 30 years, the brokers play in that market. The concern with brokers, though, is that if you do get less than $2 million, what we're seeing, we had a bond sale that really was this close to the same situation, where a community had to do a 20-year bond issue. It was $700,000 for 20 years. They got one bid, and it was a local bank. That's it. Nobody else came to the market. So you have to be very concerned about that, because what's happened in the last few years is that brokers are so highly regulated now that they basically do a cost analysis, and it makes sense in my eyes, but of saying, how much are we going to make on this? and they make money per bond, which is in per $5,000 increment. If they're not going to make enough money, they just say, yeah, we'll look at the next one. There's always $20, $30 million bond issues for the next community down the line that they're selling the next day. So they're going to put their time and effort into a $20 or $30 million bond versus one that's won. So that's the problem that you have if you go longer than 15 years and you're not up to the $2, $3 million mark, is that you're going to have problems finding somebody to buy that. It's possible, but you are going to have a potential issue with that. So that is why when you look at option one on page one, of you're looking at the revenues of $72,000, why didn't we stretch this out to make it so that we could be under $72,000 in debt payments, is that problem that you run into, is that if you go longer and try to stretch it out to get under $72,000 for the debt payment, you're going to run into issues with who's going to buy it. So that is option one in a nutshell. Really, if we get the $500,000 grant, option one is pretty, I mean, that to me is pretty self-explanatory. If you want to do these improvements, that's a good option.
The flip side is that we still have D&E, docs D&E, that will require substantial maintenance just to keep them like they are. So it's not like it's...
It's like you're leading me into option two and three. I like it.
So let's talk about option two and three. And this is really, and again, Barb, help me if I need help here. So option two and three goes over the scenarios of doing D and E docs and A3, A4 in one of them.
In two.
In option two, yep. And then in option three is doing C, D, and E and A3, A4. So C is the big variable between option two and three of whether or not we do C, because that one right now does not exist. The above C right here does exist, and that just remains the same. Those are in good shape.
Yeah, there's actually the first two in yellow exist currently, but
need work.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, those two, but they would be replacing those and adding on for C. This is the reality of what Barb had talked about for D and E doc, is that. And this is, I don't live here, but it sounds like you guys like the marina and want to keep it up. The reality is that D&E docs are getting to a point where you're starting to invest a lot of money in something that is not good returns. A lot of repair costs for something that is not bringing in any additional revenue. If you do a repair like Barb was talking about on E-Doc, having to do a repair next year of $3,000, that's not bringing in any additional revenue. That's just keeping the revenue that you currently have, making sure that you don't lose the dock or lose slips because you can't service the people that want to be there. So in terms of the marina, this is something that when you look at option two and option three, yes, they're costly. Yes, there might be an investment from an outside fund. But that's going to really be a decision of, is this something we want to continue to invest in? And if it is, we're going to have to look at doing something with D&E doc at some point, because they're getting to a point where you're putting in way too much investment for no additional revenue. So let's talk about option two first. And again, actually just a review. So We did other scenarios of saying, okay, let's just do DDoc and A3, A4. Or let's do DDoc and A3, A4 without utilities. Or let's do D&E without utilities. We did all these different scenarios and options to see if we could keep the cost down while maintaining the cash flow. And what it came down to is that all those different scenarios that you don't see don't make sense for one reason or another. One of the main ones is, you got to address EDOC at some point. It's way too much cost that you're investing without getting additional revenue. A3 and A4, it doesn't really make sense to not put utilities in there, because the amount of revenue you're going to get that you can charge people because you have utilities is worth the investment, the upfront investment, to put utilities in there, and also in A2. So there are other scenarios and looking at trying to keep the cost down, but the reality is that the scenarios you're looking at for option two and option three
are the ones that bring in the best cash flow for the cost of the project. So option two goes and says we're going to do a new DDAC, new EDAC, and build A3, A4. So nothing having to do with the current current two slips of CDAC and any build on for C. This is just addressing DE, A3, A4. We did run two scenarios for this in terms of looking at a 30-year bond issue and a 25-year bond issue. State law only allows you to go 30 years or less, so that's the reason why you can't go anything longer than 30 years. USDA is your only option for going longer than 30 years, but they don't do marina funding like this. When you look at they probably understand how they wouldn't do it, probably. So when you look at open market, so this would be another open market bond, really a broker would buy this for 30 or 25 years. You can see if you got a $500,000 grant, so again, we're assuming a $500,000 grant for this second phase, the 30-year bond issue would be aggressively, if you go down near the very bottom, you'll see $140,000 per year for 30 years, or conservatively $151,000 per year. The annual estimated additional revenue for that option is $130,000, so you're still going to have some sort of cash flow needed, whether it be additional or the excess that's in the marina right now, possibly, and or outside funding. On that option, so one of the things that we did look at, and this is why I asked Barb, is what is the useful life of these projects, and 30 years really?
30 years is the standard. It really is more than that. I mean, the current docks we have in are, some of them are close to 50, but 30 is the standard. And I guess that would probably be about the time that you would want to look at having to start, you know, putting some maintenance into it.
Yep. So that's why we looked at the second option of 25 years. If you said, okay, we don't want to have a 30-year bond issue for one reason or another, whether it be that's too long, or we're looking at the sense that when we reach that point, you're probably going to have maintenance issues on that dock that's now 30 years old. What would happen if we looked at doing a 25-year bond issue instead? And you can see that the aggressive debt payments are $154,000, conservatively $168,000, which would start to get you into the sense that most likely if you did a 20-year bond issue, even if you got a $500,000 grant, you would most likely need outside funding to kick in, whether it be every year or some years. So you're getting into that sense of most likely you're going to need some sort of outside fund to kick in a little bit of money every year to cover the debt payments.
And basically when I think of outside fund, there's two sources, general fund or Main Street. I mean, realistically is what I'm thinking that would be the options. Okay. Or a combination thereof.
Questions?
So we also did look, this was actually a last second of saying, I asked Abbott Marsh to give me the numbers to do it all. So we were running all these scenarios of doing this, obviously, that we talked about, but they ran scenarios on D, and then D and A3, A4, D, A3, A4 utilities, D and E, all these different scenarios, but I asked them, what if you just do it all? What if you do address all these different projects, this in phase one, that all C, D, E, A3, A4, all in phase two? What you'll see is that if you do that, because of the debt payments, we looked at just doing a 30-year bond issue. This is option three, so doing D, E, and C, A3, A4. The estimated additional annual revenue is $166,000. The debt payments are between $185,000 and $200,000. So most likely, again, you get into that sense of you're on a given year, you might be okay, or you might need a little bit of additional funding from General or Main Street. But it is feasible to do that. So really what it comes down to is if you want to go forward, this really comes down to, you can see that between option two and option three, there's really not much difference. When you look at the revenue is greater and the cost is greater, but it's really coming down to the same scenario, saying you're coming to the same conclusion that on a good year, good bond sale, you might not need additional funding. If you get if rates go up on us, or you have a little bit of an off year on the slippage revenue, then you're going to need some sort of additional funding. It's going to be relatively about the same amount, give or take. So it really comes down to a sense in option two versus option three is what do you want to do? Scenarios is basically the same. Do you want to do C or do you not? That's what it comes down to. So there's really not that much difference. So if you get the $500,000 grant, that's the big caveat. We get the $500,000 grant, it really comes down to, do you want to do C now, or do you want to wait and possibly do C as a phase three, or not do it at all? So
that's a $500,000 grant twice?
Twice, correct. Yep. So option one, $500,000 grant. Option two or option three, which is our phase two, $500,000 grant.
In these scenarios we're looking at.
Yep.
Correct.
So let's switch over to page two, which shows what would happen if you do a $250,000 grant instead. So this assumes same thing, except we're backing it down to $250,000 of grant money per option. What you'll see is that in option one, this is what I talked about, and this is what Mike rightfully pointed out, is that you could potentially do a 20-year bond issue. If we got $250,000 instead of $500,000 grant, that might be something that we have to look at doing for option one to try to plan for the impact financially to do option two and or option two or three. What we're going to run into is that if we only get a $250,000 grant on option one, and we know that that's really what the maximum is that they're willing to give us. Again, as Barb pointed out, the next year you might get $500,000. It's not that you're not going to get it the next year, but if we only get $250,000 for option one in phase one, then we have to start thinking about if we want to do anything with the DEC A3, A4, you got to really start thinking about the cash flow in the sense that now we're putting in ourselves in a position where we're most likely going to need any option or outside funding every single year if you only get $250,000 a grant in each phase. So option one shows you that 15 versus 20-year bond issue, the payment is about, what's that, $18,000 less if you do a 20-year bond issue. But you're, again, that's where you're starting to run into a position both cash flow wise, setting yourself up for phase two, and you're also running yourself into a position where you do a 20-year bond issue, how good are the rates going to be, because you're only going to get possibly one or two bids, if any, on that type of bond issue. For $1.3 million for 20 years, that's going to be tough. But if that's what we have to do to make the numbers work, that's what you got to do. So option one is there's a couple, basically a reset option B and option one of saying if we don't get the grant we want, then we might have to do a little bit more conservative financial analysis and take a longer bond issue for option one, setting ourselves up for a better position financially, cash flow wise, for the second phase.
So is all the extra revenue you're talking about here going toward paying off the bond? Does any of it go towards we're going to have 45 more slips or whatever, and the cost to manage all that and, you know, that sort of thing? If all that extra revenue is going to pay off the bond, where's the revenue going to come to manage the extra expenses?
Yep. So this is my understanding. Again, Barb, chime in here, but a lot of your current revenue is going towards maintenance on those docks that are more and more maintenance is being needed on the current docks. So from our standpoint, when we were looking at this, was that when you put in the new docks, that's going to open up your expenses to that you're currently paying for maintenance and repairs on the docks to do what you're saying in terms of Now we have maintenance and everything that's going to be less on what we needed, but what we currently had before, but you're going to have more to maintain a bigger system. So
that only applies to options two or three. Options, option one doesn't free up any maintenance funds, obviously.
Yeah.
When you said option one is a pretty good risk, does it make, and then you said April 1st, could we make this April 1st deadline?
Yeah.
And that, and then we kind of know if we get the 500,000 or less,
yeah,
that kind of plays our hand for round two.
Well, after we had the, when we had the initial discussions with Andy on this, I mean, Barb and I were talking about it, and I mean, my initial, and she can correct me if she has different opinions, is going back to Andy's comment, it's a no-brainer to apply for option one. Even if we don't get it, we learn something with regards to what, if any, grants they will apply, and we'll get some feedback even if we don't get anything. So,
and this year, one
yes.
month away.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah,
I mean, ultimately, if the commission's, you know, is basically nodding and say, yeah, that makes sense, go for it.
Yeah.
So is the extra revenue, is that based on 100% occupancy, or if there's some numbers that go, you know, like what you assumed when you came up with these numbers?
I believe it's 100%.
I don't know the formulas that...
Evan Marchuse.
Yeah. But I would have to think they would take into consideration. I mean, they know that some of your slips have to be transient and some have
right.
to be. I mean, they know that, and there's got to be some formulas.
Some industry standard of what they might
mm-hmm.
use. We're looking at risk to the general fund of an economic downturn or something. Don't we have kind of a good model, perhaps, in what happened during the last recession, which was severe? And how that affected, maybe on a percentage basis, our annual income? Or is it not comparable?
In terms of the marina revenue you're talking
about? Yeah, marina revenue.
Yeah.
We're looking at, you know, the risks of the general fund as if our expectations of excess income are not correct. In other words, you know, people don't show up.
So what's your question?
What happened in the
happened in the recession? Would that advise us to help us sharpen our pencil on what our real risk is to the general fund?
Did it
drop by like 20% or 30%, or did it stay sort of float along, so to say?
I don't remember being in a panic, being in panic about it.
So that would be news that would say, well, this is worth the risk in some respects because.
Right.
You know, we have a fairly, other than our maintenance costs that we're absorbing now, a fairly steady occupancy rate and income. Or is that not, am I just not?
I'm trying to think back that far.
Well, there's been a waiting list forever, hasn't
there? There's been a waiting list forever, so that doesn't concern me too much. And so since I started managing it, we have always been in the red. And that's...
John? Red or black?
Black,
sorry. And I want to say it was about 2007 when I took it over.
See, I don't recall real bad.
You have that information from last year's budget. If you go back to our 15-year budget history, and I didn't bring that up, and I don't remember what those numbers are right off the top of my head. But we could go back and look at how much of a hit the general fund took and how much the marina fund took.
Right.
You're going to have those numbers right. They're right on that sheet already.
Mm-hmm.
So, how comparable different financial downturns are, I can't draw any comparisons between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to Cindy, you know, we were able to weather that storm very well. We spent down a fair amount of our fund balances since then on the open space acquisitions and other improvements and things. So we don't have as much of a buffer as we had before. But we're still in excellent shape.
Plus, Mike Wiesner's analysis gave us a more pessimistic picture.
Yep.
You're correct.
Yeah, I can't find it, but yeah. That's a good question, I would say. I mean,
you want me to run down and get that chart?
No.
I can go do that.
Is it in the budget? I can bring it up.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not sure if that is. I'm not sure if that is.
It was a separate
kind of... Yeah, yeah, I don't know if we're...
I don't think we need it.
No, it's not in the budget.
Now, but yeah, I'm just kind of curious, looking at it from a risk, the general fund, how much of a risk is it really over time?
And the other discussion needs to be, I think it's totally justified to finance some of the marina costs to general fund, just like parks that are used by everybody. It's a city service. It's an asset. It's no different than roads, no different than parks, no different than...
I guess the distinction I might make is that the marina itself, the slips there, provide a very limited benefit. Direct benefit to our residents. It's a generalized benefit in that there's more people coming to town, they spend more money and so on, but for very few actual residents benefit from the slips that are there.
But why do we finance other things to create economic engines? Why do we do bike trails to create economic engines? It's not because our locals, maybe a higher percentage of locals are using the trails, it's to create a destination for mountain biking or road biking. It's the same argument could be used. We are spending a very minimum amount of money of general funds for the marina because the marina is an economic engine.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's not a lot of general funds. It works out with that.
And the other thing to think about, like we're talking specifically about slips and financing the slips, but when you talk about the overall marina, you're also talking about the shopper's dock and the boat launch that does serve a wider variety in the community.
And so we finance those through the marina operations itself.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know the history, but to give you a little idea, just looking at your audits, the revenues have gone up every single year, even through the recession. In 2005, you were about 80-some thousand. 2007, it was at 95,000. 2011, it was at 110,000.
Not a lot.
And
it really didn't.
So it's risen to where it is in the past few years, on average about 160,000. So I don't know if that was down to more or what, but you can't, from your audits, I'm not seeing anything where, I can't tell of anything of you had a big downturn or something. It's gone up every single year, but I don't know if that was because of rising fees or more slips or whatever, but they didn't go down. So
a couple things. One, a previous commission made the statement that this thing needed to be self-supporting and the general fund should not subsidize it. You're not bound by that decision. I'm just advising you that those comments were made by previous commissioners. And I'm trying to remember if the commission actually took a position on that, but I know we had a couple of commissioners that were adamant about that at that point. Something else, one of the things that might have generated some of those additional revenues is we had additional slips coming online at the One Water Marina as well, too, during that time frame when those all came on. Those have slowly been going offline as those are sold to the private entities. And that, from my perspective, having the One Water Marina available to bring people in changed the dynamics about how people came and visited Boynton City by boat. They wouldn't come before because they never knew if there was going to be a slip for it. So they would stop in Charlevoix and wouldn't come any further. Since we've had additional places to put people and a more favorable view of our marina, we've got a lot more traffic. So I think there has been a significant increase with regards to the spin-off effects of our marina over time. And we're losing some of that, again, as we don't have the flexibility with the One Water Marina as well. Barb can tell you she's getting calls from people that want to come to Boynton City, but we don't have the slips to house them. I mean, groups that want to come down here and stay, and she has to turn them away or really struggle to try and make them fit into our marina and or borrowing or stealing slips from the Harbridge or things of that nature, trying to make it work. So we're missing some opportunities there as well, too. The other thing I'd point out is, even though there have been some down years, I mean, we're looking at the average in the history here that, okay, maybe it would have to take a loan for a couple years from the general fund and or the Main Street fund. I think there's the resources to do it currently. I mean, it all depends on what else all that we put on our plate. We have to figure out where are we going to spend the money. Is it here? Is it Avalanche? Is it at the open space? Is it on roads? You know, where is this all going to, you know, it's all a big pie and you have to figure out how it all fits together. Last thing I'll mention before I quiet down for a moment is one of the things that kind of given me the willies of this since when I first came to town was one of our mayor's exchanges with Rogers City, where they had built their big, huge marina. The fishing industry crashed and whatever, and the state overpopulated marinas in that area, and their general fund was basically put in the position that Andy talks as the worst case scenario, where the general fund was having to bail out, you know, make their bond payments, and they had to do that for a fairly long time. They have that position has flipped. It's now profitable for them. Correct me if I'm wrong.
They're able to make their bond payment. At least
yes,
they have been.
So that kind of put the fear of the failure of that, and it's, you know, it's a realistic risk in previous commissions, and I just want to remind you of that as well too. All that said, I think we apply. That'd be my recommendation.
Well, certainly seems like phase one, which is option one, is a no-brainer, just like you said.
And we've spent a lot of time talking about, you know, do you do that or do you deal with the maintenance issues first? But that brings in the additional revenue. And if EDOC fails and we have B, you can take those people and put them in B. It reduces your revenue, but at least we can still continue to operate. And I'm thinking, okay, if we've got a sinking dock or a dock that we have to take out of service, that would get us more sympathy votes potentially in a future grant application.
it's a bad way to get sympathy.
Yeah, but I think it would play.
So if it doesn't work out, Barb, with that, and we have to turn the $500,000 grant or leave it on the table, Harbor Springs did that, right? They refused to take
correct,
the grant.
Correct, they walked away.
So how does the Waterways Commission respond to that sort of thing? Is it they probably won't get a grant in the future?
It depends on why you walked away from the money. They assume that if you put in an application, you want the money and you have a project that's ready to go.
And you're serious enough about
and
it.
And that you're serious
about it. Do you think we're at that point?
Yes.
And I think us and Harbor Springs are two totally different things.
I'm not comparing. I'm just,
yep.
You know, are we ready? Because I've heard a lot of people talking about parking here. You know, have we thought through the parking? We're going to be adding 30 slips.
Yeah.
What are we going to do about parking? All I see here is what's going on in the docks. I don't see anything about the infrastructure. It's going to have to be improved to handle the 60 or however many slips there's going to be.
Yeah, well, the folks who dock will get a little annoyed because there's not more bathing facilities or bathroom facilities for the additional slips.
I don't think so because we're on Lake Charlevoix and not on the Great Lakes, we attract all different kinds of boaters. So many of our boaters are trailable boats. They don't stay on them. They're not using, they're, just because you double the size doesn't mean that you double the use of everything. Same thing with vehicles. Are there going to be additional vehicles? Yes. Is every slip that you fill going to bring in an additional vehicle? No, because there are some that come by water and they don't have a vehicle there. There are a lot of them who have vacation homes here and, you know, vehicles are home versus down at the marina. On your weekends, of course, it's busy. During farmers market, during 4th of July, there's always a parking problem. There is all over town. On the average day...
No, there isn't.
That you go by the marina, there's not a parking problem.
I think one of the things that he was getting at is, are there other operational, in the past couple of questions,
sure.
Are there other operational costs, for instance, where you need
another
dock hand during the summer if you have 30 more docks? Are there other things that were recurring
sure.
Or additional capital
sure.
expenditures someplace else that would occur because of this?
Sure. Definitely the on-land facilities will need some upgrading, maybe eventually some expanding. So I'm not going to say that what we have is sufficient for the long term and we won't ever have to do anything with it.
So could that be worked into the next phase, that, you know, these things are going to have to be done as well, rather than just adding the slips, just, you know, so you have the overall, you know exactly what you're doing? Or is there at some point where, okay, we do option one now, and then we have to pause for 10 years? Can we do that? And does it work? Or are we just assuming then that we're going to have to do option two if we do option one? You know what I mean? Can we stop?
Option one doesn't force you to do two. What's going to force you to do two is the maintenance costs and needs.
The deterioration of the
system. Yeah, they're going to, we're going to reach a point where we're going to be unable to continue to band-aid them at some point.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So like EDAC, for example, there's no utilities on it. If that had to go away, it's a loss of revenue, but it could go away. DDOT can't go away. And
have a viable marina?
Correct.
But it would take care of the parking issue.
There's not an issue.
So people think there is. Though.
People think there is, and there are times.
At some point, you gotta, like, you know, in everything that you talked about, with, you know, people with vacation homes, people coming from somewhere else, and some, I know Dean mentioned, you know, what benefit is it for the city residents? You know, you kind of, I think we got to be really careful how we speak about this, because what you just said, it will be an advantage for everyone who doesn't live here.
You know, I think that's an important point, that, you know, how we talk about this, how we roll it out.
Sure,
right. And somehow, if I'm a resident, I want to make a connection that this is something that I can support, and if I think it's great for somebody who doesn't live here, then I'm less likely to feel like it's a good idea.
Yeah, you're right. And it's difficult to get the average person, without having a really long conversation with them, the big picture. Because think of the landscape of Boyne City or downtown if the marina just went away. If we said, you know what? Because it truly could. I mean, instead of putting more money into it, just rip it all out.
Or,
no more revenue,
just improve,
no expense.
Just improve what we, you know, just repair what we have. I mean, I found your argument interesting, like all the extra revenue goes into building new rather than maintaining what we have, kind of thing. Because at some point, that's all going to need to be, you know, in 25 years, we're going to have to replace that. Then what? You know, I mean, it's just the way thing, you know, you build something and you have to maintain it, and or it goes away.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, keep in mind, they said the estimated life cycle on those is 30 years, and we're getting 50 years out of, you know, 40, 50 years out of ours. So there is some time to start building revenues and start building the funds up again for when you have to go through this cycle again.
Yeah, and hopefully, as we look at this, we come up with a better plan. I don't know how much thought was given into when what we have was built, you know, into replacement in the future. Was there a capital improvement plan for it? I don't know.
I mean, just the... And a couple of thoughts that we hear when in these discussions too. I mean, one thing that I have Barb and Evan Marsh probably have to confirm that, but the whole reason to do A2, A3, A4 is, yeah, you're going to have broadside, but that's to protect the other docks.
Correct.
So if you get 50 years out of D dock right now, I would hope if you build A3, A4 that is now 50 or 60 years, because you're not going to have the beating that it's going to take if you have those blocking the docks. But
yeah, when you get into anything over 40 years, you're starting to look at potentially like electrical that's not up to code anymore.
Yeah.
You're looking at deck replacement, things like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When they start to get to their end of the life cycle, so when they're talking the 30 years, they're starting to talk about those types of things.
And I, the other point I have that I hear, it's not necessarily marina, but when you talk about how does this benefit people that live here, one of the things that people talk about all the time and for services that a city provides that doesn't necessarily correlate straight to a 100% resident, I think you guys were hitting on it, and I don't know if this is the point you're getting to, but I think you were touching on it, is that what would Boyne City look like if you didn't have the marina and the money that those people are bringing into the city? I mean, if the amount of money that those people are spending at your downtown businesses, restaurants, that could be what's keeping those businesses in line and in business. So that is one of the things. It does indirectly benefit your residents, because maybe the Main Street diner wouldn't be in business if they didn't have the money that the people that are bringing, that eat there, that are doing, that come to the marina, bring in. So, not saying that it's gonna, it could be the case for every business, but I mean, we work with a lot of communities that have, that aren't on a lake or are on a lake, that are a lot different, because you have to think about that sense of that, that those people that are transient people that are bringing in revenue on a daily basis because you have a marina. So,
yeah, I totally agree, and that was what I was trying to make. I mean, we pay for a skating rink out of general funds, and not everybody skates. We pay for a dog park, and not everybody has a dog. We pay for a beach, and not everybody goes to the beach. I mean, that's kind of, it's the overall picture for the vitality of the town.
Well, I think even the better argument is, I mean, you know, especially since under Barb's operation, you know, set aside all those additional benefits that potentially may be coming in that may be a little bit nebulous to people, is the marina has done better than breaking even. It's paid for itself. It has not been a drain on the general fund for most of the last two decades, at least. And that's with its current operation. So we have the ability to expand its usefulness for the community in a different ways, in ways we believe are financially solvent.
Sure.
The only thing I would kind of disagree with, though, Mike, is, yeah, we're making money, but here we are now where it's just about ready to fall apart. So we didn't invest back into it over those years. And normally that's what you try to do, is, you know, continually make improvements so it doesn't get to the point
where... I'd say we stretch it from 30 years to 50 years.
This 30 and 50 years, I don't think that's a number that got thrown out. I'm just saying that if we don't, we're being told that it's no good. I mean, we've got to do something to it, or it's going to normally try to maintain something that it doesn't get to that.
But I would argue we have maintained it beyond its life expectancy through good management.
Okay.
But you're right, it's at the end of its life.
Right.
I mean, I would agree with Tom that, yeah, we've gotten bonus years out of it because of what we've tried to do with it. But you'd like to be in a position that we've built up a fund balance over those years.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
And I'm thinking with the addition of, especially with B and A2, I think they've got that right, we start to be able to do that. We make the marina much more financially viable. For whatever reason, we're at this point, and I think long term, I think even with D&E, there are strong cases to see that we have a financial viable program as well. Again, I still come back to sticking our toe in the water with option one, because I think that's the least risk for the city and opens up.
With a $500,000 grant.
That's correct. Well, I think you apply for the $500,000 grant and see what they come back with.
I don't think there's any way you can just say let it all go away or rip it all out or anything. I mean, that's part of why this is becoming a successful resort town, is because we're on the bottom of this lake, and it brings all kinds of.
I hate using the term of a successful resort town. I think it's part of what makes Point City a successful community. And those are all pieces that fit together.
Well, not all communities have the aspects that make it a good resort. That's all I'm saying. I mean, it's part of.
Do you want?
Or not.
Are you looking for consensus? Are you looking for a motion? Are you looking for an action?
Well, this is a special meeting. We generally don't make motions in work sessions. That's kind of our promise to the people.
Right.
But I'm thinking staff's basically saying, yeah, if we're going to apply for this, we'd have to say, okay, Barb, Abin Marsh, start putting the pieces together so we could have it. And then we could bring it formally to the City Commission at a future City Commission meeting to approve the actual submitting of the grant application.
And we got to be able to approve that before April 1st.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we can do that at our March 17th meeting.
So you're looking for like a sense of the commission at this point?
Yes.
I'm all in.
I'd say that.
I'm all in too.
I would say that.
Yeah. I'm hearing this all in with regards to option one.
Option one. Phase one, yeah. Option one.
Yep. Yeah. No brainer. At 500 stuff.
Yeah.
No brainer. Yeah.
You're at me. You?
Yeah.
There you go.
So do you do much like with DDAs? The DDA and its development plan, they had $4,674,000 in its DDA plan. And it's going to, it was only renewed for 15 years. So can it bond? Does it have any capacity to bond if it's only got 3 or 4 years left before?
So if you do a DDA bond, you're going to have one of two options that you have to take in that. And yeah, we work with a lot of DDAs. The background is that the unfortunate part of DDAs is that they've been gutted for the most part because of decisions made by the state legislature. But what was done in the past was that you could capture the schools, right, capture the city, capture the county, capture the, I mean, in Lansing area where I live, you got like the library district, the CATA bus system, all these different systems that you could capture. Now you're not legally allowed to capture schools. And everybody else has an option out, an opt-out. So the problem that you run into with DDAs at some point in its life cycle is that unless you have a very favorable county or authority system is that you get to a point where you're basically capturing yourself. So that's why DDAs have been really, they've struggled, and a lot of them have just gotten to the point where they're basically putting up Christmas lights, and that's about it, unfortunately. Because you're essentially just capturing the city of Boyne City growth and maybe the county, because a lot of counties still are fine with it. But in terms of the DDA, you have to make a decision. If you do, there's two types of bonds you can do. There's DDA revenue bonds, which are only backed by the DDA revenues, and you can only do those for the life cycle of the DDA. So if you want to do that, you have to either do a 3 or 4 year bond issue, or you have to extend the life of the DDA. Or you can put the city of Boyne City's general fund backing behind it and do bond issues for 20 years or whatever you want to do. But it's got to have the backing of the general fund if you're no longer than the period of the DDA. So,
do we just get the county and the city?
No.
I think we get them all.
We get them all.
Yeah. Does library in or out these days? They're back in, aren't they?
They're back in.
Yeah.
I think I heard that Monica said that we don't think we get out until the reauthorized. Is that correct?
Until the plan changes.
Until the plan changes.
That's 80 times.
So that's going to be the interesting point. And that's the life cycle I was talking about, was when a lot of what's happened is, like, it might be more favorable climate up here. It depends. It's geographically based a lot of times. But I will tell you, like, in the Lansing area, it's been every time you change the plan, more and more are opting out. And that's the problem that they're facing, is that whenever you change the plan, you're now putting yourself in a position where you're going to capture less revenue because somebody's going to opt out, and then you're going to eventually either just do yourself for the county too. But it's tough sledding for DDAs. Anything else?
Yeah, do we have anything else to discuss, Mike? I appreciate the end of your...
No, that's what we've covered, everything that we talked about today.
Yeah, so how did this happen that, you know, this looks so good enough? I mean, is it just working with you through the...
Yes.
Water?
I mean, because we've been peppering Abenmarsh, we've been peppering Miller Campbell and Paul's daughter, and saying, okay, you know, help us get... We've always been talking about we need the numbers and some scenarios. And Andy and his team were actually put it together in a way that made sense. And
This was terrific, Andy, and excellent explanation. Great day, and I have a lot of confidence in it. I wish I had as much confidence in our longer term projections, operating projections that we've made for the city as a whole.
You and I share that opinion.
Are you an economist by training?
No, I don't. I mean, that's what my boss, so Tom, he always tells people whenever they ask about, well, where are interest rates going? And he always tells them, I guarantee you they're either going to go up, or down, or stay the same. And that's what I tell people is, I mean, I've been telling, obviously I'm a pretty young guy, like to think, anyways. I've only been in it for less than a decade, but we've told people ever since I got in it, it's like interest rates have to go up at some point. I mean, my gosh. But now we just hit historical lows again last week because of the market. So you got me.
Are you going to see negative interest rates in your career?
I hope not, because that means the economy is in really bad position. But I mean, that's the thing is, like, that's why I kind of like working in this market, the bond market, because either interest rates are really down and it's good for our business, or interest rates are up and it's good for the economy. So either way, it's positive news for us. But.
Well, I appreciate you coming in and spending the time with us. And
yes.
Long drive.
Not a problem.
Enjoy talking. Any further questions while we've got them here, or anything else before we meet? Adjourn until we meet tomorrow.
Anything for the good of the order? Anything else? At 5:35, I'll make a motion to adjourn. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thanks, everybody.